Everything that I do wants to make life better for North Carolinians. I mean, that's exactly the platform that I'm running on.
We actually need immigrant populations to help balance things out. We can't continue to fund Social Security, Medicare, all of this stuff without immigrants. And it's always been that way. Don't act like this is some new trend or anything like that.
Tent, big tech, routinely, daily, hourly, appropriates their content, rebroadcasts it, earns billions of dollars of revenue through advertisements in the process of broadcasting it, and gives not one penny of compensation for the creators of that content.
Are you ready?
We are ready. We are live in the swamp. I am Brett Witterble at Hold Their Feet to the Fire in Washington, D.C. You can hear the texture outside as the sirens are blaring. It is great to be with you. 704-570-1110 is our phone number. Be a part of the conversation. We'll be taking phone calls throughout the program. I want to go out, though, to Quail Hollow to visit with our very good friend Breaking Brett Jensen. You know him from his radio show, Breaking with Brett Jensen. I just upgraded him. That's free of charge, Brett Jensen. It is good to have you back on the program. Tell us a little bit about what's going on over at Quail Hollow, the President's Cup, and then, of course, what you'll be planning tonight. Welcome to the show.
Well, thank you, sir. I appreciate it. And hopefully this all goes well, because you never know when there's 50,000 people trying to use the cell phone at the same time, what's going to happen.
But you sound great.
I'm standing here right now between the ninth green and the 10th tee, and Adam Scott and Hideki Matsuyama are probably about 25 feet away from me. I had to turn away from them so they can't hear my radio voice. And so, it is crowded in. It is miserably hot, like 95 degrees, 94 degrees, and not a lot of wind, a little breeze, but it's miserably hot. But guess what? Everyone here is having a blast because it's the President's Cup.
Absolutely. Is there a particular golfer that you have got your eye on at this tournament that you're watching particularly closely?
Yeah, I mean, the two golfers that I really am the most interested in, and they're actually playing together, is Jordan Spieth and Justin Thomas. Like, they've been friends since they were 10 years old, and right, they're paired up together, and they are you know, two of the better golfers on the planet, especially Justin Thomas, who won his PGA Championship here at Quail Hollow in 2017. So, like, those are the two, just from a fan standpoint, just because they're probably, you know, two of the better golfers in the world. And so, from that standpoint, it's interesting. But, you know, the funny thing is, Brett, earlier this morning, Governor Cooper met with us, and he spoke with some of the media, and, you know, people were asking about golf, and he was like, you know, you got the Hall of Fame moving to North Carolina, you've got, you know, the Women's U.S. Open that was here this year, you've got the Men's U.S. Open that's always here, the PGA Championship that's coming here in a couple of years, and he was saying, look, don't kid yourself, golf is a major reason why so many corporations come to Charlotte, because at that C-suite level, they all generally play golf. And he said, golf here in North Carolina is a major reason why we attract so many businesses.
Oh, no, I have no doubt about that. I mean, so many business deals are discussed and thought about while you're out there on the links. And look, it's a beautiful place to play. I mean, people who have been in North Carolina all their lives, I think, maybe take it for granted sometimes, but I'm telling you, coming from places that I've lived, it's absolutely spectacular. It's beautiful. Quail Hollow is a beautiful course, and I think it's going to be a remarkable outing. It's going to acquit so well for the city, and it's going to, I think, really turn it into a greater destination than it is even right now.
Well, and I tend to agree with you on that, but I will also say this. So I had heard early this morning that Obama was not coming, Trump was not coming, because, you know, he just had a LIV Golf Tour tournament at one of his courses in Jersey,
right,
that he was not coming. But I had heard that Bush was coming Saturday. This is like people in the know. And so we're talking to, and that Biden was at best 50-50 for Sunday. And so 30 minutes later, we're talking to Governor Cooper, and Governor Cooper goes, you know, it's just a great place because President Clinton will be here Saturday, President Bush will be here Saturday, and I guess I need to talk to President Biden to make sure he comes. So that was so he spilled the beans that Clinton and Bush are coming definitely on Saturday.
Well, there we go with that. That's a big arrival. I'm glad I'm flying back tomorrow and won't be caught up in air traffic issues on Saturday. You've got a very important story that you have been following very closely as it relates to education. You're going to be talking about this tonight on Breaking with Brett Jensen. Please share with the class.
Well, yeah, and actually that's going to probably have to come out tomorrow. We're having to postpone that a day. Just because still waiting for some unexpected occurrences happened a little bit ago. And so it looks like unless something changes between now and 5 o'clock, I'm going to actually have to put that back. But I can tell you this, Brett, just for a teaser for tomorrow, is that, yeah, this is something that I've been working on for all week, and including the weekend, last weekend. And this is something without question, every single parent that has a student at CMS. And even if you're like, you know, Brett Wernable and have children in college, you are still going to want to hear this story because you will be shocked, absolutely shocked at what I'm going to report.
Wow. That is a tease and a half, Brett Jensen. So this is going to be mandatory listening. I can't wait to hear you break this down because you do such a great service for the students, the teachers, the parents here in Charlotte, keeping them up to date, abreast with what it is that's going on out there. And I'm looking forward to hearing the coverage tomorrow. If that's the case, then so be it. And we'll certainly talk about it again tomorrow in advance of that reporting.
I really appreciate that, Brett. Yeah, like I said, this is something we've been working on for about 6 days now, and it will shock you when you hear everything that's involved. It will completely shock you.
All right. Breaking with Brett Jensen tonight, 7 p.m. Every night, 7 p.m. And as stories warrant, we will check back in with him at the President's Cup. Already breaking a little bit of news for you with how many presidents are going to be in town. Be well, Brett Jensen. I'm Brett Witterbull, News Talk 1110 and 99.3 WBT. Let's head on over to Pam Warner with a look at the roads. News Talk 1110 99.3 WBT. Brett Witterbull live from Hold Their Feet to the Fire 2022 here in Washington, D.C. I'm staring directly at the Capitol Dome. Just to my left, fittingly enough, is the Senate. It is interesting to see on the ground here in Washington, D.C., the reaction to what we've got coming. And I think it was 49 days on Monday, so it would be 47 days since until the election. These people in this town are really worried. The elites in this town, the folks that define the swamp in this town are absolutely, look at this, are absolutely paranoid and afraid that you're going to take the power back come this election in November. And they're deathly afraid of losing their power. They're deathly afraid of being in a place where they're going to have to answer questions for the policies that they have embraced. And we're going to have Tom Homan come by in a little bit. He's going to talk about his experiences in the Trump administration and dealing with the border security issue. But I want to go back to North Carolina and keep it North Carolina here for a second, because you have seen something very important happen just in these last hours. And it is the endorsement of Ted Budd by North Carolina's top law enforcement group. They've abandoned their longstanding support for Sherry Beasley for aligning herself with Defund the Police activists in the years since George Floyd's death, opting instead to throw their support behind Ted Budd. This is what Ted Budd said while he was doing an interview. You know, you get these candidate interviews, you get these discuss the position that you're staking out interviews. This is a little bit about what he said as it relates to policing, defund the police, et cetera.
Everything that I do wants to make life better for North Carolinians. I mean, that's exactly the platform that I'm running on. And everything she does is about running away from Joe Biden, when we know that everything that she does is about being a rubber stamp for Joe Biden's failed policies. And she, in order for her to try to win, we realize that she's in a desperate place. We realize that she has to be deceptive in order to win. But she has to run away from Joe Biden. But everything she would do would be a rubber stamp for Joe Biden's policies.
So the North Carolina Police Benevolent Association endorses Beasley. had endorsed Beasley for statewide judicial offices in 08, 2014, 2020, when she first was appointed by former Democratic Governor Beverly Perdue in 2012 to fill a vacancy on the North Carolina Supreme Court. The North Carolina PBA's executive director even praised her extraordinary record as an appellate judge. And in 2013, the association's president remarked, "We're extremely proud of Justice Beasley and her accomplishments." Now, Representative Ted Budd, who is facing off with Sherry Beasley, is now the recipient of this endorsement in this November's big-time, high-stakes race for the Senate for the retiring Republican Richard Burr's seat. The group took issue with Beasley, who in 2019 became the first African-American woman to serve as Chief Justice of the North Carolina Supreme Court, for partnering with Cori Bush out of Missouri, depending on where in Missouri you are, a self-described Black Lives Matter activist on a fundraising campaign launched in July of 2021. So law enforcement is sitting back and saying, wait a minute, you were endorsed. We believed in what you were trying to do. But when we get into defund the police, and Cori Bush is, I think maybe the biggest advocate for defunding the police in all of D.C., that's a big deal. That's a radical position for Beasley to stake out and to then lose the confidence of the PBA. Now, this is a hugely important thing. The Police Benevolent Association represents not some radical position when it comes to dealing with the issues attached to law enforcement. They believe in representing law enforcement itself. And that is a hugely important issue. That is a hugely important matter that has to be dealt with. And so I am going to welcome to the program. He's always kind when he makes time for us. Mr. Tom Homan is joining us now to visit for a couple of minutes. Tom, it's good to see you, my friend.
Good to see you. I apologize I'm late.
No, it's absolutely, it's fine. It's fine. What we can hit in this period of time is we can knock it out very quickly. Your sense of what you're seeing at the border and the blow up on Abbott and DeSantis and all of that, what's your reaction to that, Tom?
I'm pissed off.
Yeah.
I'm pissed off every day because we handed this administration the most secure border of my lifetime in a matter of months. They had historic illegal immigration. Mm-hmm. We worked so hard to create a secure border, most secure we ever had. We told them what not to do,
right?
Or they would have what they got, and they ignored it, and they did it anyway. So this, if people think this administration is incompetent or it's mismanagement, no, this is their plan. They ran on this plan, and they're implementing it perfectly. And I thought, as far as DeSantis and Abbott, they're national heroes because half this country doesn't even know there's a border crisis. Unless you're listening to Fox Network that I work for,
right,
or shows like yours, you're not hearing the truth. If you're watching the other networks, you don't even know there's a border crisis. What these guys have did before the midterms is they created a national conversation.
Right.
They even got Democrat governors and Democrat mayors to speak up about immigration. Not the things I want to hear, but they're talking about immigration, which puts this thing back on the front page. And now people are wondering what the hell is going on. Why are we getting so many people delivered to our city? And Americans aren't stupid. They'll do the research to find out. So I think it was an ingenious idea. And for them to say, you know, how shameful it is. The Biden administration has moved 1.7 million people into this country, most by airplane,
right,
with taxpayer-funded airline tickets, or by buses, mm-hmm. 1.7 million. And that's over half of what, you know, they got. So what DeSantis and Abbott is a fraction of what this administration does. So it shows hypocrisy. Where were these governors and mayors when they're getting midnight flights in the middle of the night with no coordination?
That's right.
Biden? Not a word. So I think Governor Abbott and DeSantis did the right thing. And I think they created a conversation that we need.
Final question for you. Very generous with your time, as always, and we'll catch up with you when we get back to Charlotte. But let me ask you this. Are you worried that if the House and the Senate flip, that the administration is going to feel like in that time period that you're not going to have the power switch yet, that they'll push through an amnesty of some sort to stick it to the American people?
Absolutely, they'll try that. And hopefully, you know, it won't get by the Senate. And hopefully, you know, look, I think the American people are pissed off. I hope they are when they get to the find out the truth. We can't be the welfare state for the entire world. So they'll try it, and I don't think they'll succeed. Because by the time they get it done, we'll be back in power, and you know, and I think we'll be in the White House at 24. So if the right guy's in the White House at 24,
yep,
I'll come out of retirement the third time, because I'm right. So pissed off, I'll come back work for free. I actually had that conversation with President Trump 6 weeks ago, and he says, well, I want you back, but you know, you might want to think that free thing. You might want to take a check, so we'll see about that.
All right. Tom Homan, appreciate your service to this country, helping to keep us secure. We'll talk again soon, my friend.
Thank you, sir.
You got it. That's Tom Homan. Lots of stuff to unpack there. News Talk 1110, 99.3 WBT. Anna Erickson's got the update. News Talk 1110, 99.3 WBT. It is the Brett Witterbull Show. You know, so much is talked about with what's going on at the border that people forget that we have got amazing talk show hosts on the very front lines of the border. And I'm happy to welcome to the show one of these folks. Sergio Sanchez is at KURV down there in McAllen, Curve Radio. And he joins us now. Sergio, a very good afternoon to you. I want you to, if you can, paint the picture of the sort of stresses that you all are under there at the border, right on the front lines with this crisis.
Yeah, you bet. Thanks for the call, Brett. I was reviewing some numbers from local Border Patrol in our sector. Our area is deep South Texas. If you know the unique shape of Texas, we'll look at the bottom, which is the tip of Texas. That's where Brownsville, McAllen is at. That's our sector. That's a lot of ranch land. A lot of little cities that dot the area, market about 1.5 million people, a bunch of little cities, but lots of ranch land. And it's down here that in this fiscal year, and of course, because most of you all know fiscal years, you know, from October 1st to the end of September the following year, during this fiscal year that we're about to finish of the almost 2 million plus people that the Border Patrol has caught, processed, and the overwhelming majority of them have been released into the country. They've been given these folders and this paperwork, and they've taken buses and planes into the interior. Over 2 million people that have crossed the southwest border, mostly the southwest border. We have processed, I would say, if I remember, and I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I was reviewing the numbers just a moment ago, I think it's like 440,000 in our area here in deep South Texas. And of those this fiscal year, I think 71,000 were unaccompanied kids. And I was reviewing this because we had some other friends and media. They were also, we're sharing this information. Story a day ago while I was up in D.C. doing the fair, the Federation of American Immigration Reform, immigration check. On that day, Border Patrol had processed a 6-year-old and his 2-year-old little brother. And they were wearing white shirts, you know, like undershirts, and their family sent them across all of Central America and Mexico on their own with coyotes, with smugglers, across the border at our area here in deep South Texas, and in permanent black ink on those white shirts, they put the kids' names and contact information for family to, you know, be reached and eventually take possession of these kids. This madness happens daily, and sadly, Brett, we don't pay attention to this craziness, this lunacy that has been exacerbated. This problem has been made so much worse by Joe Biden and his open border policy, because people know the border's open. They're coming by the thousands. There are more on their way. This has been made worse by Joe Biden. We don't pay attention to this until Martha's Vineyard gets a couple of plane loads of 50 people. You know, it's the end of the world for them.
Right.
It's ridiculous.
And let's not soft soap this here for a second, Sergio. You and I both know, when they write that information on the shirts of those children, the anticipation is that they'll be able to reach out to family members who can take them in if they make that successful journey. But the sad reality is those shirts will also identify them and their bodies should they not make that to the United States and not survive, correct?
There are so many unaccounted for. That is the untold story of Lord knows how many. I pray it would be hundreds. I fear it might be thousands that have come in this direction, have been swallowed up by the cartels in Mexico, by the criminal element, by the sex traffickers in Mexico. We will never hear from those children ever again. And there's a flip side to this, too, Brett. That information, some of these smugglers, some of these cartel guys, they'll use that information to hold these kids as hostages and demand that their stupid parents. I mean, they should be in jail for sending their kids on their own north. Their parents will be extorted. Or the family members, the phone numbers are on the shirts, the family members in the U.S., they will be extorted for ransom. Like, give us a certain amount of money if you want to see your kids again. That's another thing that happens on a daily basis that's never talked about.
Let me ask you this, or I don't want to ask you this. I grew up in El Paso. I spent a lot of years there. So I'm familiar with what a healthy border crossing looks like, and I know you are as well, how it would normally function when you're not underneath this kind of pressure. But the reality is, and for some reason, the Washington, D.C. elites like to think that, well, of course these communities are okay with illegal immigrants coming in because they're Hispanic and they have a connectivity to the culture. That's not the case at all. Where you are situated, you have people that go back 7-8 generations, all the way back to when it was Spanish land, where they have raised their families. They are great patriots. They love this country. They don't want to see it come apart like this. How do you deal with the simpletons in Washington and the way they think in their little cubicles?
They're too far away, Brent. They're too far away. And I'm glad that the situation is now coming to them so that they can reflect on this problem and hopefully someday try to fix it. But the unfairness of it all, look, anyone who's in this country legally, whether they be Latinos, Hispanic, or from China, all the majority of folks who up to date have gone through the system legally. I mean, I was born in McAllen, in the city that I now work in.
Right.
I grew up in Reynosa, Mexico. My dad, back in the 60s, 70s, they would traverse back and forth easily. He waited 10 years. My dad waited 10 years to get the proper work permit to come and work here. A few years later, my mom and dad naturally, they naturalized a citizen. At 10 plus years, attorneys, filing fees, English classes, history class, all that. That's the process. And forgotten in all this are the Lord knows how many hundreds of thousands of people are waiting to come into this country legally through a visa system and naturalization process. Those people are lost. No one's even talking about those folks because right now we have an asylum system, an immigration court system that is backlogged to the tune of 1.7 million cases and growing exponentially as we get hundreds of thousands more people crossing the border, gaming the asylum rules, gaining the asylum system in this country, hoping to get a court date, and they will never be kicked out of this country. Here in Texas, on the border, my county, my region, and even for El Paso, I'll say the same thing. Like, per capita, the border, U.S.-Mexican border, the cities on the border, we're some of the more, my population, my neighbors are some of the more patriotic and God-fearing.
Amen. Amen.
Christian people, and they've served, their families have served our country. We are the children of Korean veterans, of
Amen.
Vietnam veterans, of World War II veterans, and our kids have served in the military per capita more than, the ratio is higher than almost all other markets in the country.
Yep. Sergio, this is the first of what I hope will be many conversations, though I hope it gets resolved much, much more quickly than it appears to be. God bless you and the people of McAllen for being really the tip of the spear on this thing. And we're going to pray for you and for those folks that are making this incredibly dangerous journey across the border that they will not have to face this danger the way they have been. Sergio Sanchez, KURV, appreciate you, man, and we'll definitely connect with you again.
Big hug to you, brother. Thank you.
Thanks, buddy. That's Sergio Sanchez at KURV. News Talk 1110 993 WBT. Let's go over to Pam Warner with a look at the traffic. Then 993 WBT. It is the Brett Winterville Show. Great to be back with you. Lots going on here. It's extraordinarily windy. We're up on top of a building. Just to give you guys a perspective here. So we are between the Capitol and Union Station. And we're on top of the building that houses, of course, Fox News Channel's Bureau, right? So you got your Fox News Channel Bureau here. And I don't know exactly where in this building it is, but it also has MSNBC's Bureau. NBC News and MSNBC. So you see all these folks doing stand-ups out on the street, and it's a fascinating thing to walk into this building because you go, oh yeah, there's that reporter, and it's kind of an interesting sort of a setup because we're also outside, and it's been very blustery this afternoon, and we're making plans to handle the wind as it comes in and blows around here. So we hope that these canopies that we're under are going to hold and they're not going to pick us up and blow us away like something out of Wizard of Oz. I hope I don't see Chuck Todd on the bicycle, riding the bike, pedaling the bike, in the outfit of the Wicked Witch of the West. 704-570-1110. You are totally able to be a part of the conversation as well. This is a fully interactive show, and we're going to cover a whole lot of different things, including not just the immigration issue, though that is a front and center issue, no doubt, but also we are looking at a couple of other things that are happening. Your friend Mark Zuckerberg, he's in real trouble. Mark Zuckerberg is getting looked into on his election contributions from last election. CEO Mark Zuckerberg, his wife, and three voting rights groups were hit Thursday with legal complaints alleging malfeasance related to activities surrounding the 2020 election. The Center for Renewing America, CRA, filed two complaints. The first were against Zuckerberg and his wife, Priscilla Chan, and the second against groups called Center for Tech and Civic Life, CTCL, also the Center for Election Innovation and Research, Election Innovation, and National Vote at Home Institute. Now, these were filed Thursday morning today with the IRS. The complaints obtained by Fox Business allege that Zuckerberg and three groups were involved in a scheme to inject $500 million into the 2020 election in order to throw it to President Biden. Biden ultimately defeated, Donald Trump winning the swing states of Arizona and Georgia and Michigan and Pennsylvania and Wisconsin. Zuckerberg hired, this is the reporting of Fox Business, Zuckerberg hired former campaign manager for Barack Obama, David Plouffe, to spearhead the effort, according to the CRA. Plouffe allegedly funneled most of the $100 million grants from the couple to Democratic-leading jurisdictions in swing states via three tax-exempt voting rights groups ahead of the November 2020 election. So here's a quote from somebody who was looking at this. It's beyond disgraceful to imagine federal taxpayers subsidizing the partisan preferences of billionaires who easily could have been given to a Democrat super PAC in 2020, the CRA said in its statement shared with Fox News. Of course, they would not have been able to take a tax deduction, so they disguised the political nature of the donations and shuffled them through charitable intermediaries. This was all about taking advantage of getting a tax cut? Whatever happened to pay your fair share, Marky? Marky Mark and the Zucker Bunch. 704-570-1110, News Talk, 1110-993 WBT. News Talk, 1110-993 WBT. It is the Brett Witterbull Show. Guess what? I'm not where I was, but now I'm here. And that's what's important because we're in a windproof area now. Thank goodness. We have a great technical team here helping us remotely. It is great to be with you. 704-570-1110 is the phone number. TJ, I'm going to call an audible. Can you get me the clip from AOC in which She embraces, I mean, this is really, really, we could have a breaking news sounder for this. She embraces replacement theory, which we've been told does not exist and is an awful thing, and it's a horrible thing to talk about, that you have people in government trying to bring people in so that they can pay more in taxes and get exploited. But essentially, AOC says as much in a video where she's kind of riffing on the state of immigration in the country, and here is what AOC said.
Take a look at it. There are, and it's not just Japan and South Korea, but there are quite a few countries that are really struggling because young people, because under the burdens of capitalism and under living under a society that's increasingly concentrating wealth among the rich, we're not having kids, and or we're not having kids at the same rate. And we actually need immigrant populations to help balance things out. We can't continue to fund Social Security, Medicare, all of this stuff without immigrants. And it's always been that way. Don't act like this is some new trend or anything like that.
You know, it's incredible. It's incredible. Can you cue that up again for me? Because there's an important lesson at the very front end of what she's saying. Give me the just like the first 15 seconds, TJ.
Take a look at it. There are, and it's not just Japan and South Korea, but there are quite a few countries that are really struggling because young people, because under the burdens of capitalism and under living under a society that's increasingly concentrating wealth among the rich, we're not having kids, and or we're not having kids at the same rate. And we actually need
Stop. You want people to have kids? I thought you were saying just in the last number of months that it's so dangerous out there with climate change that children shouldn't be born, can't be born, it's not right. But let's dive into this for a quick second, because I am somebody who believes in justice. I genuinely believe in justice. It is important to understand that no matter where you're from, if you're an American citizen, if you're somebody from overseas who has come into the country legally or illegally, you have human rights. You shouldn't be exploited. You shouldn't be assaulted. You shouldn't be raped. You shouldn't be killed. You are made, created in the image and likeness of God. Doesn't matter what your nationality is. Every human being has the divine spark in them. Okay? And that's what we have to remember. But for her to play dumb, or maybe I don't want to assume the opposite, I don't want to assume the other possibility, because that's mean and I'm not going to be mean. To play dumb and say, well, these people, I mean, we need them to come in because they're providing for, you understand that people are using janky, is janky a legitimate term, TJ? I mean, I don't know what the kids are using it these days, but janky's a term, right? Using janky Social Security numbers that are either stolen or made up, the government makes out like a bandit, knowing full well, AOC, you are part of the government. And those people will never get a dime in Social Security benefits. I mean, they may get Medicaid, they may get a vote, they may get all that stuff, but they're not going to get the retirement money back that they paid into the system illegally. My gosh. It is so sad to me that somebody with so much charisma like she's got, and let's be honest here, I'm not praising her, but I'm acknowledging she has a constituency, she has a following, she's gotten people to believe her nonsense, that she could not turn it to good. Instead, she turns it to, I don't even know what you call it. But while we're doing this, I want to give adequate exposure to the folks that are making these weird assertions. Can you give me the Stacey Abrams cut? Now, admittedly, this is not a great piece of audio quality because it was at a live event in a gymnasium. But it is interesting to know that Stacey Abrams thinks that heartbeats inside of a baby at 5 or 6 weeks, that they're not real, that they're fake, that they're really not real. Seriously, listen to this in her own words in Georgia just a couple days ago.
There is no such thing as a heartbeat at 6 weeks. It is a manufactured sound designed to convince people that men have the right to take control of a woman's body away from her.
Okay, birthing people, which some people refer to as women. Birthing people, do you think that the heartbeat of the baby that is going to be born 8 months later Do you think that that is a made-up sound, that is a fake sound? Do you believe that as birthing people? I'm trying to use the terminology of the left. I would normally say mothers. All of you mothers, people who may be grandmothers, aunts, spouses, who go out and participate in the gestational, the pre-gestational and gestational process, so that birthing people can have a human. Do you believe that that sound is fake, and that it's designed so that men can continue to advance the patriarchy? How does that even come up in a debate or a discussion in Georgia when you've got issues of all sorts that are really getting the focus of people? Where does that come from? I don't know. Genuinely, I don't know. I want to take Mary super fast here. Mary, welcome to the show. You want to comment on AOC?
Yeah, she's. We all know that she's crazy, but there's actually there's a little bit of truth to what you said, and it only pertains to this portion of it, which is that the workforce of America is actually in need of very good workers.
Yes.
And the fact that they can be supplied from immigrants, but they should be coming through legally. And that is the whole crux of the situation, is that there used to be an immigrant workforce that would come in, the migrant workforce would come in, then they would go back home during the wintertime,
right.
And then they would come back up during the summertime, and they would work, and we would have plenty of workers that to be able to fill the job needs that are here in the States. Now, we do have a real job need in the States because we have a lot of people that don't want to do the work that you can get other people to do that are coming from outside the country. And, of course, then you also have got the situation where we've got a bunch of people that are on both sides of the aisle that are willing to hire them, but they don't want to hire them for a living wage.
Exactly. That is no. You are 100% spot on, Mary. That's exactly right. They don't want to pay the wage that they... There have been terrible stories that I've read in the past where you have people go and pick onions in Georgia, and then when it's time to pay them, there are disreputable people who will then call for an immigration raid. They'll drop dime, and essentially what they've done is enslaved those people who picked onions. That's a horrible reality. We have to recognize the dignity inherent in every human being and treat them with justice. And I'm serious when I say it. And people are like, oh, he's a conservative. I didn't think he'd believe that. No, you got to believe it. News Talk 1110 993 WBT. Pam Warner with a look at the traffic. All right, we have a dispute forming in my messages. John says that Janky hasn't been used since Shaggy and the Mystery Machine on the cartoons. I thought Janky was a contemporary. Janky is like way more contemporary than that, right? I've got a guy here who's going to actually do the investigation for me. He's going to go out into the streets of Washington and poll a few people and find out if Janky's a legit term or not. TBD. TBD. This sample will not be scientific, but it will be fascinating nevertheless. Stan joins us. Stan, welcome to the program.
Hi, Brett. You were talking about the police union hall ago endorsing Carrie
Ted Budd. They originally endorsed her, but then they endorsed Ted Budd. Yes.
Right, and so you talk about Cord Budd and defund the police movement. You know what, I have always thought, I don't think the defund the police is so much about defunding the police as it is repurposing the money for programs that Democrats like. And here's what I mean. If you look at the city of Charlotte's police budget next year, it's $3.2 billion. So what they want to try to do is repurpose that money for something to be more akin to social programs and things like that. But here's a problem, especially I know in North Carolina. Look on the Constitution specifically prohibits people, the government, from basically funding things with tax dollars for other than any purpose for which it was collected. So when they bring up defund the police, I'll say, okay, we'll take the tax cut. Can you imagine what the city of Charlotte people could, if they put $3.2 billion back into the private economy and people could buy their own security, which is already happening, there's some of the security companies now having their own police, and the more they have customers they have in certain areas, the more police they have. And some HOAs are even doing that. So we could just do private parking police and just get the tax money back. If they can't report the money, then I'll bet their message for defunding the police would go away right quick.
Well, wait a minute. If you're going to okay, so if you're going, if you want to get the right policies in place, then I think what you need to do is you need to induce people to make the right sorts of decisions. Here's why I say this. Here's what I say. You should be able to write off on your taxes a security system. A security system should be a write-off on your income tax.
Right.
Because you are not then draining resources from the police department to conduct an investigation as to why you got broken into. In addition, if there's a desperate client, call for people not to utilize law enforcement to its fullest potential, I would also submit that you should be allowed to write off firearm purchases for the full price of the firearm as well. Because you are taking responsibility for securing and protecting your property in your domicile, whatever that domicile is. And so if everybody had an alarm system in their house, it'd be awfully hard to rob everybody. If everybody had a firearm and it was well known that people were able to. And look, I wouldn't say you write off every firearm that you buy. So you go out, you buy 40 38 caliber handguns, right? I think you write off like the principal weapon for defense in your home. And then you reduce it accordingly. But that's what ought to be happening instead of this idea of, well, we're going to do midnight soccer and basketball and let's get together in the park and make a mural, because that's not going to deter criminals from victimizing the most vulnerable people who are out there.
And if you want to know what their motives are, follow the money. Don't listen to
it's them. Always the money. It's always right. Look, it's always the money.
Right,
it is.
I love your show. You take care.
All right, you got it there. It's good to talk to you, Stan. I mean, I think there are a lot of ways you can induce better behavior. And if we believe the left at their word, which, I mean, we should take them at their word, that they want to defund the police, well, then that doesn't mean that people ought to be left out in the cold. You should allow individuals to write off security and safety mechanisms there at their homes. Because if the cops don't have to jump to square one every time somebody gets whatever you want to call it, robbed, assaulted, what have you, and you're able to kind of handle it, you're going to free up police resources for community outreach. And that's pretty easy to understand, I think, no matter how you slice it. By the way, janky, the word's origin is murky. The more comprehensive Oxford English Dictionary says it's, quote, probably a regional, affected, or colloquial pronunciation of junky. Oh, wait a minute. Like junky as in garbage or junky as in drugs? This is getting much more complicated. According to the Dictionary of African American Slang published in 1994, it classifies it as a noun meaning bad luck and says it's probably a variant of jinxed. Now we've gone even deeper. Let's go ahead and get Anna Erickson and the investigative unit of WBT to find out the origins of the janky.
News Jankety?
Talk 11993.
The word janky.
Oh, news janky. Okay. I thought you were
janky.
Talking about jankety.
I don't know. Now I don't even know what that word is. Now you're giving me a whole other level.
That's what I do.
How we doing on the roads?
Hanky.
What does that mean, Vix? Hanky.
Oh, strange.
Weird. Well, don't you say strange or weird? I mean, hanky, that has no meaning.
Well, we say hanky.
I don't want you guys using words around me that got no meaning. I'm taking the stairs and walking.
Hanky, janky, jinxy, junky. These are the words that confuse people, both native and immigrant. 704-570-1110. News Talk 1110 and 99.3 WBT. Remember when you were in school? I want you to go way back in time to when you were in school. So, like, let's say 4th, 5th, 6th, 7th, 8th grade. when you were in school, not quite high school and not certainly kindergarten. And you were raised, probably you took a class called civics maybe at one point. You might have taken government when you were in high school. But at some point, you were educated on the different branches of government and what government does and how government functions, right? And then when you got out into the real world, you started paying taxes and you started paying attention to the way things kind of operate. You looked at the reality as talked about in your elementary school years or your junior high years. And then you say to yourself, wow, this doesn't look at all like I was told. I haven't seen an actual bill proposed that then goes through a committee that then gets passed out of committee and goes to the Congress for passage and then goes to the Senate and then goes to the president in a very long time. It's very rare that you see those sorts of things sort of happen. It doesn't feel like the people in Washington, D.C. are working for the American people for whom they're supposed to represent and serve. And I think there's nobody better as an example of this than Rashida Tlaib. Rashida Tlaib yesterday had a cavalcade of bankers, like big-time bankers, okay? Moynihan from Bank of America, Jamie Dimon from Chase. These folks that are serious players in the world today as it relates to, you know, billions and billions and tens of billions and hundreds of billions and maybe trillions of assets that are out there. So Rashida Tlaib decided she was going to work them over, not about home loans, not about opening new bank branches, none of that sort of stuff. She was going to grill them over the religion of climate change. And I want you to hear how this goes, because she is particularly vicious to Jamie Dimon. She's particularly like very nasty and snotty with him. And if you listen to this, I think you're going to be taken aback. But I do like the sort of unified messaging coming from the bankers. And I can't believe I'm getting on the side of the banksters. Let's hear it.
Well, I hope you got good lawyers. Do you know, you have all committed, as you all know, to transition the emissions from lending and investment activities to align with pathways to net zero in 2050. Do you know what the International Energy Agency has said is required to meet our global 2050 net zero targets of limiting global temperature rise to 2.7 degrees Fahrenheit or 1.5 degrees Celsius? So no new fossil fuel production starting today. That's like zero. So I would like to ask all of you and go down the list, because again, you all have agreed to doing this. Please answer with a simple yes or no.
These are
Does
bankers.
Your bank have a policy against funding new oil and gas products, Mr. Dimon?
Absolutely not, and that would be the road to hell for America.
Yeah, that's fine. That's fine. Sir, you know what? Everybody that got relief from student loans has a bank account with your bank should probably take out their account and close their account. The fact that you're not even there to help relieve many of the folks that are in debt, extreme debt because of student loan debt, and you're out there criticizing it. Ms. Frazier, how about you?
We will continue to invest in and support clients who are investing in fossil fuels and in helping them transition to cleaner energies.
And Mr. Monahan?
We are helping our clients make a transition, and that means we're lending to both oil and gas companies and to new energy companies and helping monitor their course towards the standards you're talking about.
Yeah, Mr. Char.
The same thing as Mr. Moynihan said.
Yeah, I'm not going to ask you, Mr. Dimon, because you obviously don't care about working class people in frontline communities like ours that are facing huge amounts of high rates of asthma, respiratory issues, and so much more. Cancer rates are so high among my communities that I represent. So I'm not going to even ask you if you're committing to ending financing of new oil and gas projects. But Ms. Frazier, Mr. Monahan, Mr. Shea, we are living through a climate crisis today, and a commitment to net zero requires a commitment to ending fossil fuel financing. It is important because I want you all to know at the end, we're going to pay the cost of the public health impact. These are people that you're supposed to be serving, the folks that you're supposed to be providing and supporting in communities. Anything else defies all logic and scientific evidence at our disposal.
So Jamie Dimon is the villain for saying we're not going to get rid of fossil fuels like immediately and then just like, hey, you're on your own. And here's what's so interesting. Rashida Tlaib is a congressperson. She is a person who represents a district in Dearborn, Michigan. And she is a person who has a great deal of power. She's in the majority right now. She turned this into, you guys don't support student loan aid for the student loan people. But Joe Biden just did that with an executive order. They're not even in. They don't. She does not apparently realize that these bankers don't carry student loan debt anymore. I mean, I remember when Maxine Waters was made fun of for not realizing that when she was asking all of the Wall Street bankers, why aren't you lending money? And they said, because there's a federal program that lends that money. Jamie Dimon isn't the guy who's going to hand out the money. Uncle Joe is. This is so frustrating that I have to actually defend the banksters. But the fact of the matter is, this is how the government is run today. 704-570-1110, News Talk 1110 and 99.3 WBT. Pam Warner's got a look at the traffic. Ladies and gentlemen, I am Brett Witterbull, proprietor and host of the aforementioned Brett Witterbull Show. It is great to be with you. I need to do a follow-up on a story we spoke about on Monday. And let's be honest, it was a story that absolutely caught fire. It is this story itself. The NyQuil chicken. You guys remember the NyQuil chicken saga? We talked about it fairly extensively. We had people phone calling and people telegraphing and people telegramming. Really, it was incredible. People were trying to get to us by any means that they possibly could. This has created a genuine modern-day social media crisis because apparently, until the FDA posted about the NyQuil chicken, it was not a social media trend. It became a social media trend that then exposed it to many, 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 many millions more people than ever knew about this. And so now they have a crisis that, because of the warning of the NyQuil chicken, the people are now doing the NyQuil chicken thing, where in the past they had no idea it was even going on. This all started September 15th on the FDA's official website entitled Recipe for Danger, Social Media Challenges Involving Medication. The agency warned about the social media video challenge encouraging people to cook chicken in NyQuil. And nobody can really point to anybody who ever had this as an idea before it showed up on the socials and the FDA. It had been internet folklore as a joke. Nobody ever actually tried to do it, but now apparently the people are trying to do it. And this is really bad because government really has limited power. They can't come in your house and pull the chicken out of the pan that you're cooking in the NyQuil. I mean, they don't have that power, but they can warn. But there are people who have no knowledge at all of the NyQuil chicken, and they'd suddenly find out about it, and now it's time to go run to the store for some stuff, which is terrible. You know, it's a problem that we live with here, and it's a balance that we have to strike. I don't know that there's a NyQuil phobia as a condition, but as I was doing research on this, I was informed of 10 of the most common phobias that we have in the country. Now, TJ, this is very interesting to me, okay? These are the 10 most popular phobias in America. I didn't see NyQuil chicken on this list. I saw arachnophobia, fear of spiders. I saw ophidophobia, which is a fear of snakes. I saw acrophobia, the fear of heights. I don't like heights. I got to be honest with you. I'm not a heights guy, but I don't have aerophobia, which is the fear of flying. I like flying in airplanes. I don't have a problem with that. I just don't want to be up there on a platform at a high altitude changing the lights up on a transmission tower, okay? You've got cynophobia, which is the fear of dogs. You've got astrophobia, which is the fear of thunder and lightning. You've got trypanophobia, or trypanophobia, which is, now I could see somebody having this. And as I've gotten older, I'm not as afraid of them. Fear of injections. a condition that can sometimes cause people to avoid medical treatments because they're afraid of getting a shot. Social phobia, fear of social situations. Agoraphobia, fear of being alone in a situation or a place where escape may be difficult. Mysophobia, not about mice, that's excessive fear of germs. So those are your big phobias. I didn't see any kind of a phobia of chicken cooked in medicine. Like, I think it shouldn't be called NyQuil chicken. I think it should be called what it is, chicken cooked in medicine. I don't know anybody that's going to say, man, I want to have some chicken cooked in medicine. Like, medicine just sounds like a chemical kind of a thing that's going to absolutely take you to a horrible place. I don't understand this. But you see what government does? Government brings about a topic, warns about the topic, and then creates the panic as a result of the topic. How do you think we got from COVID to everybody's got to buy toilet paper? What was the connection there? How in any way, shape, or form was toilet paper connected to COVID? I didn't understand that at all. It wasn't like COVID got you on the lower 40. It wasn't like you caught it there. And no, I don't know if monkeypox had anything to do with the toilet paper run. I don't think it did. But this is what's so crazy. Government, by and large, creates scarcity. And scarcity then creates panic. We need to all be focused on important things. And I just wanted to bring you all on board with the various phobias and warnings that you get from the federal government that you pay for. And that's an important point to understand. By the way, I wonder
News Talk 1110993 WBT, Brett Witterbull Show. Great
Did
to be
she
here
die
with
of
you. We are live
heart.
In Washington, D.C. as we've been watching the ebb and flow of the immigration debate, the fight
we'll
against
we're taking
terrorists
calls.
Coming across
Beth
the border, and of course
by.
The necessity of securing the border.
Live
it's a hugely
News
important issue, and we will continue the conversation. You are more than welcome to be a part of the discussion. Coming up later this hour, Beth Troutman comes by. We'll get a preview of Charlotte at 6. And lots of other big pieces of information out there going around. 704-570-1110 is our phone number for you to be a part of the conversation. So here is what I think is interesting about the divide in this country right now. I am very optimistic that the Republicans are going to take the House and the Senate. I can tell by the way a very specific attack line has disappeared. I tweeted about this earlier in the day, but I want to lead with this because I think it's a hugely important point. When it comes to the issue of inflation, when it comes to the issue of affordability of fuel and gasoline, it is clear that the folks on the right are the preferred vote. Okay, the conservatives, the Republicans are the preferred vote. When it comes to issues on crime in the streets, your personal safety and security, immigration, each of those boxes are checked for the Republicans. The Democrats are effectively running on Trump and abortion, and they're not getting the reaction that they sought. And I can tell you, I can give you the proof here. President Biden, 2 weeks ago, 2.5 weeks ago, made an allegation against 74 million people in this country, and he floundered ever since, coming out and saying that you were semi-fascists, that you were ultra-MAGA, semi-fascist terrorists, for all intents and purposes. And then almost immediately, you start to see him walk this back. Now, that should be a unifying message for those true believers who watch CNN and MSNBC, Chuck Todd and Margaret Brennan, and of course this week with Georgie Stephanopoulos. That should still be utilized as a talking point, but it's not. Tell me, where did the allegation go? He took such a huge moment in time, a speech at Independence Hall with lighting that creeped people out, putting Marines behind him like they were props, making a speech condemning more than half of the country, and it's now just disappeared. That is not any part of any strategy that I can imagine in any way, shape, or form. What they did, if you add up everything that they did from April on, funding continuously going out the door to the Ukrainian forces. We've now spent $54 billion. The inflation has gotten out of control. Gasoline is expensive. There are going to be shortages this winter. 20 million people are behind on their energy bills. Are we going to see utilities cutting these people off? The student loan debacle, the giveaway going north of $334 billion and on its way to maybe $1 trillion. You look at this, point after point after point. Their only, quote, victory was mobilizing women in the wake of the Dobbs decision. This is an opportunity for people to reframe this discussion. Joe Biden knows he went too far. He knows he stepped in it and then tried to clean it off his shoe, but it's not effective. Here's a bit of advice that I would give those people who believe in small government, smaller government. Here's what you need to do. You need to talk to the young workers who can't afford a house right now in this country. You talk to the young workers who are maybe brand new families that are forming that may or may not have children that are stuck living in apartment buildings in dangerous metros with no way out visible. Speak to them and talk about these ancient Democrats with their old-fashioned notions of command and control economy and, of course, wide open borders. You'll get traction. You need to talk about abortion in a different way. You need to talk about abortion as a matter that is being debated in state houses as we speak, and it's an opportunity for younger generations to make known their beliefs on this issue at the state house. The federal solution is no longer available as an option. I know Lindsey Graham got a little panicked and bucked and introduced a bill that's really not going to go anywhere. But the fact of the matter is, it is the younger generation that is coming up in this world, and they're seeing a world of diminished returns. It's not lost on me that we are looking at a replay of the late 1970s, and we know what that led to in 1980. If the messaging is put together properly, and I know that Kevin McCarthy is going to put out a statement tomorrow with objectives and promises and things that are going to get done, then maybe they won't mess this up. But the bottom line is this. The way the cards are stacked, they're stacked against this president. And this president understood that in his obsession with Trump and MAGA and semi-fascism, he pushed it too far. He pushed it too far. When you have somebody who's the commander in chief more interested in sucking up to the mullahs in Tehran than he is in talking to the good people of Texas, you know they've gone too far. This is a man operating, for all intents and purposes, as the president of the states that agree with him. That's his worldview. News Talk 1110 and 99.3 WDT. Well, you know what that means. That's not Huey Lewis. That is Van Hagar. Pound cake. Beth Troutman joins us as we cross the streams in the afternoon. Good to have you back, Beth Troutman. How are you?
Hello. The other BT. You have the other BT today. I actually thought of you. We were talking this morning. I think the last time that I was crossing the streams with you, we were talking about the fact that no one had claimed the $1 billion, the lottery prize, and now two people have come forward and they're splitting the winnings. And I couldn't be happier about this. Like, how cool is this story that Buds were on a road trip, or this is what I'm imagining because their names haven't come out yet, but that they were on some kind of road trip and they were like, you know what? We should buy a lottery ticket. If we win, we're totally splitting it down the middle. And they kept their word and they're splitting it down the middle.
That's look, I think it's great. I would hate to see that money.
Well, stories, right?
Yeah, I would hate to see that money go into the coffers, you know? I mean, it's $1 billion and you know, to have lost that would be a shame. I mean,
yeah, I mean they're only getting $780 million. They're taking the one that one lump sum payout. So it's only $780 that they're splitting down the middle, but you know.
Yeah, well, I hope they're able to make ends meet. That's really rough.
Right. Well, with energy prices the way they are, who knows?
That's very true. You know what they might do is they might go buy an oil well or a charging station. You know.
No, what they should do is buy a refinery, because that's where we're having the problems. Like, buy a refinery,
yes,
and get that thing up and running.
I know, and now we got a potential for a hurricane coming up through the Gulf at some point here. We got to pay close attention to all of this stuff. I mean, it's really incredible. I want to call back in time on something. You were on the show. I know you were on the show, and I think it's because you were permanently on the show at that point, or maybe almost permanently on the show. I don't remember. But remember when Bo asked us for predictions for the new year? And I said I thought we would be at war with the Russians, and everybody was like shocked about this. I'm not saying this to, I'm not trying to feather my nest. The reason I'm bringing it up is I did say that on the air. They're like, oh, I thought we'd be at war with the Russians. And now I'm starting to get nervous, because now it looks like Putin is doing conscription. He's sending all these people out to go mobilize reservists and all that sort of stuff. They're starting to say no. Like, he went to Dagestan and a couple other places, and they're like, get out of here. We don't want to go. We're not going to go fight in Ukraine. This is terrible. What's your level of concern that this thing escalates substantially between now and, say, October?
Well, I am actually quite concerned, and I don't like to be an alarmist, but here's what gave me my first moment of pause. You know, a couple of days ago, he talked about going on state television and doing this huge evening address, which he eventually did an address, but it wasn't until the next day and left people kind of questioning and wondering what was going on, which led me to believe that you've got a Kremlin that's in disarray. And you also have a person, I mean, Putin is known to be a narcissist. He's an egomaniac, a former member of the KGB, which means that he has a questionable, at best, moral center.
Right.
And he has a health issue going on right now. So if he is on his final leg and he knows this and is the personality that we know him to be, then he has no more concern about global stability. He has no more concern about people. He's only concerned about his own ego and his own mind, his own state of the way that he thinks about himself. And that's where I get concerned, because when he threatens, and he just made this, I wouldn't even say a veiled threat about using nuclear warheads, I take that really seriously, given his current not only mental state, but his physical state.
And here's what I think is so freaky about it, because we don't know that the West would reply in kind. Like, we don't know that the West would shoot nukes back. I mean, who knows? There's, you know, NATO is unified, but unified to the point of which, let's have a nuclear exchange with a guy who's got, you know, a ton of nuclear weapons. I mean, this is what is so uncertain. And I've been following something here for the last, like, 3-4 weeks. For whatever reason, I mean, people can look this up. For whatever reason, there's this obsession in some corners of the internet and the what I like to call, I call it the disaster fear. People are looking at September 24th as being some sort of a important date. And that's Saturday. Mm-hmm. Nobody knows what it is. Somebody says they think it's a solar flare. They don't know what this means. So what's happening now is it's getting so, the thread is getting so torn that people are now starting to, like, freak themselves out with all this sort of stuff. And, you know, I'm an optimist. I'm somebody who looks to the future. I'm excited about tomorrow. I'm all those sorts of things. And I just, for the life of me, don't understand how this is all going to spin out of control so quickly. But then again, 9/11 came out of the blue, and the world was changed for decades.
Yeah, and I mean, and think about the difference in what we're talking about with nuclear warheads. I mean, the casualties that would be a result of the use of that, but then the impact for years and decades to come. I mean, just look at Chernobyl and what that city is still.
That's right. That's
given
right.
What happened in the mid 80s there. I mean, we're talking about something that is alarming on so many levels, and even more alarming and as heartbreaking and as awful as 9/11 was, we're talking about something even on a larger scale. If he is in the mindset that a lot of people believe that he's in, and that is, it's beyond terrifying. And I'm like you, I'm an optimist who looks
right
forward to tomorrow and believes in hope and believes in, the better angels in the majority of us. But there was a recent poll, and this was just here in Americans, and I know that polls can be
yes
interesting and can be not interesting, but that close to 70% of Americans lose sleep at night over the state of the world.
Yes.
And
wild.
That is heartbreaking.
It is. Can I give you something kind of to think about moving forward that's not death and destruction?
Yeah, but two guys splitting $780 billion.
Well, that's really nice. Well, they better spend it. Maybe they may be able to buy one of those super fancy shelters. But here's the thing. Facebook is considering lifting the Trump ban.
Oh.
Does he even want to go back to that? Like, what if they lift the ban and you don't want to go back? Like, you know.
Isn't it funny, like, where we've become, where we've come with social media, there are so many days that I avoid it. And especially when I just heard you guys talking about NyQuil chicken.
NyQuil chicken.
And social media. And by the way, I think NyQuil chicken would taste janky, by the way. I think
yes!
It would janky.
Way to deliver the callback there, Beth Troutman.
I pay attention, man.
Thank you.
You are an aware soul. That's what we like about you. What you got coming up tomorrow on the BT?
Well, of course, on Fridays, we always have Charlotte's most beloved, John Hancock. We'll be covering the first full day of the President's Cup. And, of course, Governor Cooper was at the President's Cup today at Quail Hollow. So we will cover that as well. And anything fun, anything interesting, anything politics, anything entertainment, and anything that just might be off the wall, it could all be covered on Good Morning BT.
You got it, Beth Troutman. A pleasure to have you on the show, and I look forward to speaking with you in the morning.
All right. Can't wait.
1110 993 WBT. It's the Brett Woodable Show, 704-570-1110. So let's take a look at some of the other stuff that's happening out there. It's incredible to kind of digest this. We buried the Queen earlier this week, and now there's a story. It's really not that surprising. It's really not that surprising at all. It's only been 3 days since Queen Elizabeth II was laid to rest in Windsor Castle, but a new report is already revealing intimate details of how the monarch felt about her beloved grandson, Prince Harry, and his wife, Meghan Markle, choosing to step away from their duties as senior royals. In an excerpt coming out in this book called The New Royals, shared with Vanity Fair, author and royal expert Katie Nicol details the toll of their departure that it had on the Queen, who was allegedly deeply hurt by Harry's decision to leave his family and the country. The two officially announced their role change in January of 2020. Now think about that. Although Her Majesty was profoundly impacted, she made it clear that if Harry and Meghan chose to leave, they could not reap the benefits of being royal. According to a friend, privately, the Queen confided that she was exhausted by the turmoil of their decision. She was very hurt and told me, "I don't know, I don't care, and I don't want to think about it anymore," says the person with knowledge of the conversation. So you think about this and you say, wait a minute, she loses her husband, the grandson, takes off, says he don't want to be part of this thing anymore. He's got a book coming out. Another point of contention for the Queen was the icy relationship between her son, King Charles III, and Prince Harry, which allegedly caused the Queen so much upset. The fragile nature of the father-son relationship did not alter how the Queen viewed her grandson. However, it ensured the door was always open to her grandson and his wife and children to return. And now, for now, Frogmore House is still theirs. So this woman who served as a monarch did an honorable job. And it's like you get all this drama just compounding. How much is a person supposed to take? How much is a person supposed to be able to handle? I mean, it's incredible. It's incredible. One person who's handling news in a big way is Ted Budd, who is running for the Senate, obviously, against Sherry Beasley. He's picked up an endorsement that she had, but now he's got North Carolina's top law enforcement group abandoning their longstanding support for Democrat Sherry Beasley for aligning herself with the Defund the Police activists in the years since George Floyd's death, opting instead to throw their support behind Trump-backed U.S. Senate candidate Ted Budd. The North Carolina Police Benevolent Association endorsed Beasley for statewide offices in 08, 2014, and 2020. But now they're endorsing Ted Budd. Here's what Ted Budd had to say about his positions and the endorsement and why he felt he deserved it. Here it is.
Everything that I do wants to make life better for North Carolinians. I mean, that's exactly the platform that I'm running on. And everything she does is about running away from Joe Biden. When we know that everything that she does is about being a rubber stamp for Joe Biden's failed policies. And she, in order for her to try to win, we realize that she's in a desperate place. We realize that she has to be deceptive in order to win. But she has to run away from Joe Biden. But everything she would do, the rubber stamp for Joe Biden's policies.
Now, what's incredible about the races that are being held across the country is they all sort of have their own ebb and flow. Almost all of them have some measure of drama involved, right? You've got Fetterman and Dr. Oz. You've got Don Boldak up in New Hampshire. You've obviously got the battle between Herschel Walker and Senator Warnock. You are seeing these fights play out around the country. This one does not have with it a whole lot of drama. These are obviously two candidates that are vying for this position. Neither one's an incumbent, for obviously. And you've not seen the sort of drama that you've seen in these other races, where Fetterman says he wants to relieve people from release people from prison. You've seen what you've seen with Dr. Oz. You've seen all of this sort of stuff. It's a very interesting dynamic that's underway. Let's talk to Corey next up. Hey, Corey, welcome to the show.
Hey, Brett, how you doing this afternoon?
Doing well, thanks.
Brett, I wanted to bring up something regarding the Martha's Vineyard situation and a topic we had discussed a week or two ago about the political violence in the country and who benefits.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so here's my theory on this. And stay with me. You were quite right that the foot soldiers are people who are just live-action role-playing their revolutionary fantasies. What I was talking about with the leaders who think violence is a knob you can turn up and down.
Right.
They never cared what had happened in Portland. They never cared what happened in the other cities.
Mm-hmm.
They cared about mob violence when it happened at the Capitol. They cared then because it affected them directly. So with Martha Vineyard, the analogy is they never cared about the communities of color at the border. They never cared about these other cities.
Right.
But only when it happened to them in their face, then they cared. They talk about, oh, we got how much money we raised. We sent them to these lovely places. We got all this help. Great. You did it for 50 people one time. Now do it for 1,000 people day after day after day.
Yeah.
Communities that don't have the resources that you do.
Well, yeah, that's true. I mean, you're right. I don't have any kind of a dispute on that with you at all. This is essentially what they're doing is they're checkmating Lori Lightfoot. They're checkmating Eric Adams. They're checkmating Martha's Vineyard. They're checkmating these locations. And to me, I never fully understood the idea of sending people into, say, New York City or Chicago. Because I think there's a very real likelihood that the people who get sent in there that are not from there could risk being injured or killed. Those are two incredibly dangerous cities. New York and Chicago are incredibly dangerous. I'm here in D.C. right now.
Absolutely.
It's relatively dangerous. There's a lot of crime that's still here in D.C. That's happening. But what I would prefer to see is... Send them into California, send them into Nancy Pelosi's a locale where she's got her vineyard up in Napa, send them to Beverly Hills, send them to Bel Air, send them to La Jolla, all those places where the elites love to get together and write big checks for the politicians. So I don't have a problem with that. I just don't want to see them be put in risky danger.
Absolutely not. And you're completely correct. They're in a position where they can be either exploited into gang violence.
Absolutely.
Into sex, drugs.
That's absolutely right. And guess what? At that moment, Lori Lightfoot and Eric Adams will think nothing of holding a national address about what DeSantis and Abbott are doing to poor people who are coming seeking a better life.
Oh, absolutely not, because they don't care.
Exactly. Great stuff, Corey. I appreciate the call. It's that time of day when we reach out to Mark Garrison for Charlotte at 6 previews.
Yes, sir.
Mark Garrison, what do we got coming up on the show?
We go live to the President's Cup. Huge crowds today, and some former presidents expected to show up this weekend here in Charlotte.
Hubba hubba.
Yeah. Gaston County teachers still not getting paid correctly. That's been going on since we first reported the story 9 months ago.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, we'll get an update. City of Asheville's in the national spotlight. It's not good news. Cops are quitting. Violent crime is shooting up. And you don't want to hear that in a tourist town, right?
This is crazy.
Yeah. And finally, 6:35, Dirty Restaurant. Thursday, we'll tell you about a restaurant where there was a big surprise in the creamy crepes. Roaches.
No.
Yeah.
Gosh, that's not right.
Who knew roaches like creamy crepes,
oh,
right?
Gosh, everybody loves creamy crepes. Come on now, but you don't get to swim in it. What's next? NyQuil chicken?
Oh, yeah, I've heard about that. Yeah.
No. It's just... All right, well, this is a great show you got cooked up for us there.
Thank you, sir.
All righty, it's Mark Garrison, Charlotte at 6. It's going to be great stuff. Hey, I like this story a lot. Families are now going to be held accountable by CMS when student computers disappear. I know, go figure, right? Charlotte Mecklenburg Schools outlined new fees, forms, and procedures after a WCNC Charlotte investigation that identified $1.5 million in missing technology. Now, this is a big deal because when you steal stuff or lose stuff, you have to go back and replace the stuff. And you and I both know, because of inflation being what it is these days, that you have to replace it at a much higher cost. Well, the district-wide changes following that investigation identified $1.5 million worth of student technology. Wait a minute. Hold on. Can't you trace the stuff? Can't you put a piece of software on it or something on the iPad that lets you know where it is? Is that not possible? I mean, I wonder how many of these people took the gear and then skipped town. You know, they took the gear and they moved to greener pastures. There was one of the things that they wanted to make a priority was being able to retrieve these items for use across the different years, which is a hugely important point. Now, they lost track of 10,000 student devices during the pandemic, and those devices were mostly fueled by taxpayer money. COVID-19 dollars at the federal level. So imagine going out in the market right now and having to buy 10,000 iPads, 10,000 laptops, Chromebooks, whatever they are. That is insanely expensive to go and replace these things. Now, I don't know how they're going to, you know, be able to enforce this sort of stuff. They'll probably have a contract you got to sign and that you're going to be responsible for X amount of money if this thing doesn't end up coming back. Well, okay, we'll see what happens. They lost track of kids, too. They didn't just lose track of the computer equipment. They lost track of the kids as well. We got to do a better job managing our business here. I mean, it's just that simple. All right, I want to thank TJ and Tommy for holding down the fort while I was out of town. I'll be back in. I'm coming in nice and early tomorrow, and I'll be back behind the microphone at 1 Julian Price Place. I'm looking forward to it. It has been a tremendous opportunity to come here to Washington, D.C., bring with me you and share with you some of the important stories while still focusing on the stories that matter to all of us, regardless of where we are. That's going to do it for me. Be sure to follow me on Twitter at Winterbull Show and at the Brett Winterbull Show Facebook page. Check out my website at brettwinterbull.com. You can reach out to me. And don't forget, coming up on Saturday in the afternoon, I'm going to be speaking over at the Salt and Light Conference here in Charlotte. I am Brett Winterbull. Thanks to each and every one of you. We'll do it again tomorrow. News Talk 1110 and 993 WBT.
I don't want you guys using words around me that got no meaning. I'm taking the stairs and walking.
The pigs have won tonight. They can all sleep soundly. And everything is all right.